Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So tonight is both the Saturday night and the lunar observance night. As Ajahn Chodipalo pointed out, we were talking earlier this evening, a quarter of the winter retreat is passed already, which is a bit hard to believe. Yeah, the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? That's always a pertinent reflection, recollection, is to pay attention to the fact that whether we're practicing or not practicing, time is passing, and sort of an inexorable movement of time towards, if we have an allotted time of our lifespan, then it keeps getting closer and closer. Time is passing, and it's imperative to encourage ourselves in putting the time to the best use possible. Since beginning the retreat, I've been giving talks on most days and encouraging the laying the foundations of practice, laying the foundations of the meditation. These foundations are important. Essential. One can't. I said the Buddha himself, saying as if one were building a peaked gabled kind of palace, a large house, large building with many stories, and didn't want to bother to put the foundation in. It's an impossibility. It's completely impossible to build that building without putting a decent foundation in. And similarly, for somebody to have the wish or the aspiration to practice to liberate oneself from suffering, experience freedom, to not bother to or to somehow skip out the reflection, investigation, understanding of the Four Noble Truths, that is an impossibility. It's the importance of implementing the contemplation and investigation, understanding of these Four Noble Truths, the truth of dukkha, the cause of dukkha, cessation of dukkha, path leading to cessation of dukkha. This is an essential part of our practice, and whether we're, and whatever aspect of the path that we're implementing, whether it's in terms of virtue or concentration or wisdom, there has to be a fundamental recognition of how those Four Noble Truths are applicable at all those different levels. The the development and cultivation of our sila, the virtue, in different ways of mindfulness, clear comprehension, sense restraint, those aspects of holding to precepts as well as to various practices and protocols are all a means of helping to understand and to fulfill these Four Noble Truths. And there's these elements of difficulty, dissatisfaction, discontent, complications and suffering that arise that are alleviated through the cultivation of real noble virtue. And the same with the development of the concentration practices of mindfulness, of effort, of the actual formal meditations, to be able to settle the mind, to be able to stabilize and steady the heart, that allays a certain amount of suffering. It allays a certain amount of discontent, dissatisfaction. And the wisdom elements, discernment, understanding, and these cover other areas of that feeling of suffering, and whether it's on a coarse or refined level, these are all these different layers of practice are have their very practical application in freeing us from different elements of suffering, or stress, or discontent, dissatisfaction, however one translates it, appropriate to the situation, the time, because it doesn't really have one translation, because it's a nuanced concept, really, sense of dukkha. Because the Buddha himself pointed out these different aspects of dukkha. Obviously, dukkha, right? Say the suffering that is actually painful and difficult, that's when one feels pain and discomfort, dissatisfaction in different ways, and it's uncomfortable. It hurts. So whether it's that separation from the loved, the sense of having to be in contact with something that is unpleasant, unwanted, sickness, illness, worry and fear over sickness and illness, that's dukkha. These are the kinds of dukkha that are displayed overtly as uncomfortable and unpleasant. Having a physical body that sitting in, this is and a lunar observance night, and to sitting with for however long, it's just whatever period of time, it gets uncomfortable, it gets painful. I've been sitting meditation for almost 40 years, and I don't see that it's that's just a part of the when you sit for long periods of time, it's painful. It doesn't have to be problematic or resented or run away from. It's just the having a physical body is painful. It's uncomfortable. We dedicated chanting earlier this evening, and those were close friends of mine, and particularly the man is somebody I grew up with, and we were chatting today, and he was just saying, "Yes, statistically, there's a 1 in 2 chance for men to get cancer, and 1 in 3 chance for women to get cancer." It's just think, one in two of every male will get cancer, and 1 in 3. That's the statistics these days. And you look around the room and say, okay. Yeah, the odds aren't great, are they? And you think, as if it's... Because oftentimes we think of it as some sort of aberration. It's just that's pretty ordinary. Do we like it? Do we want it? Of course not. It's dukkha. This is the nature of having a body. Viparinama dukkha is the viparinama, sort of the dukkha of separation. So the separation from the loved, separation from the pleasant, separation having experienced happiness, and having happiness come to an end. This dukkha, the longing that we experience because we're separated from our happiness, our well-being. That's dukkha. Even when things go really well, if we're not wise, if we don't understand things in their true nature, but we still set ourselves up to suffer. And even if we don't set ourselves up, naturally, it feels different when we are experiencing happiness and pleasure, and when we're separated from it. So that to be able to understand things in their true nature. This work where the Buddha talks about the different powers, the bhala, and that they say the balas are the one of the factors of, in the wings of awakening, sort of like the 5 indriyas, the 5 balas, as their powers. So that the Buddha said the power of wisdom is displayed in the 4 Noble Truths, the understanding of the 4 Noble Truths, and that to cultivate There's a kind of a strength, a power, in terms of wisdom, to that understanding and directing the attention to that penetration of the Four Noble Truths. It's when we're able to develop a real strength and power. So that investigating those areas that are where we do experience pleasure and comfort and ease, and then to understand the impermanent nature, and that there's always going to be a separation, a movement away from things, and it's not that one doesn't cultivate happiness and well-being and ease and comfort, but it's to have it in its proper perspective, and to not create suffering around it, in the sense of when things do change, one understands. When one is separated, then it's not a shock. It's not something that takes one by surprise. And the last kind of dukkha that the Buddha points to is sankhara dukkha. The dukkha of that all things are of a compounded nature, and because they're of a compounded nature, then in order for anything to exist, it depends on all the different factors functioning together. So there's a certain stress in any kind of a system, because it's compounded, it's put together with many causal factors, so that there's an inherent stress in the system. So that the dukkha of having a physical body that is, so that even when we're in good health and all the faculties of the mental faculties are all at their sort of high levels of acuity, there's still a certain dukkha there, because it relies on many different factors having to be present, it's like, you know, say in mechanics or engineering, you know, trying to find a frictionless machine, it's hard work to do that. There's so many conditions to do that. So that sense of sankhara dukkha, when we experience, we're putting a lot of effort into meditation, and then it takes effort and attending to many different factors. And then even when the mind really just does settle down finally, and you get that feeling of real settling and ease and brightness. And then one of the factors slips away, and it changes, and it isn't maintained so easily. So that it's sankhara dukkha. And it's not as if we don't, just because it's dukkha, that it doesn't mean that one doesn't cultivate and develop and But it has to be part of the picture in order to see the scope of what we're doing, and that the dukkha that we create in terms of the mental dukkha around all of these areas of possible dukkha is minimized through wisdom and understanding and relinquishment, letting go, to not be clinging to the body, not be clinging to the mind, not be clinging to the world around us, trying to make it conform to our preferences and ideas, and to really to be able to live at ease. You know, when I think of somebody who really lived with incredible ease and free from dukkha, I think of Ajahn Chah. I mean, it was just seeing how having the wisdom, the patience, the kind of good humor, and the effort, and all of the different kind of factors that he cultivated, and culminating in incredible ease and all the different ways that he looked after people and everybody brought their difficulties to him. Just to be kind of unshakable. And it isn't as if, you know, Ajahn Chah had his own, certainly had his own physical difficulties. And he didn't have a perfect community around him all the time, whether it was monastics or lay people. So it wasn't sort of in having all the conditions be the way that he wanted it, but to be able to not be overwhelmed by anything. And that takes mindfulness and wisdom. And that contemplating and investigating these Four Noble Truths as we're engaging in the activities and duties, responsibilities that we have, and as well as in our formal practice, or meditation practice. So that taking the Four Noble Truths, investigating what's the nature of dukkha. What is it? What's its shape? Its flavor? How does it display itself? Whatever is coming up? How can it be seen in the light of something that is dukkha? And then to be investigating. Well, what is the, you know, whatever dukkha that I may be creating, what's the cause of it? As I said, it isn't as if just because we're meditators or practitioners that we everything sort of goes our way, and sort of everything is easy. We never. Get criticized for anything. Don't have any setbacks in anything. Don't have any any kind of loss. Don't ever experience physical or mental dis-ease. It just doesn't happen. It isn't possible. But we can experience these things without being shaken by it, disturbed by it. One can see it clearly and not put in the causes of suffering, not the desire for trying to get what we want, trying to get some kind of physical comfort, sensual sensory pleasurable sensation out of the world around us. Recognizing clearly that the Buddha pointed out these different forms of desire, kama tanha, the sensual desire, bhava tanha, desire for being, becoming, trying to get a state of being that we approve of, that we want, that we take refuge in, try to find security in. Vibhava tanha, trying to get rid of, trying to annihilate, not wanting to have, not wanting to experience certain things. And as long as we're operating from these kinds of desire, then we're always going to experience suffering. It's just is the nature of the system. And that's the Buddha's insight. Is to understand how how that works, and recognizing that when we relinquish the different bases of desire and attachment, we're able to experience a cessation of suffering. And it's important to investigate that and work with it, play with it, experiment with it. It doesn't mean that one's looking for some ultimate denouement of suffering, but to understand how those causal factors bring about that experience, and also recognizing that when we don't contribute to it, what's there? What's the experience? Is there a cessation of suffering? Is there a cessation of a particular feeling? The Buddha says that. We don't have to take it on faith, and we shouldn't just take it on faith. But we should be willing to work with it, experiment with it, try to understand how that works. And then to be able to cultivate and develop the way leading to the cessation of suffering, these eightfold paths, these aspects of virtue and meditation and discernment. So that this these Four Noble Truths are something to be implemented and explored, as opposed to just trying to slap a label onto experience. Being able to really get the feeling for it. It isn't until we really taste something, really understand its flavor, what it feels like, what it tastes like, that we really know it. It was just like having some kind of new and strange fruit or something that some kind of food, you see it visually, and you might see the color of it and its shape, but it isn't until we've actually taken a bite out of it and tasted it and swallowed it that we really say, oh yeah, it's like got this kind of flavor. It's like it's sweet, it's sour, it's a bit pungent, it's crisp, it's soft. So that experience of these Four Noble Truths is similar. We've got to be able to really digest it, and in order to understand it completely. So that really integrating that exploration of these Four Noble Truths into our practice. And this is where the Buddha say, when the Buddha is trying to initiate somebody into the teachings, and he would give a talk on a progressive talk on the Dhamma, and would be on the generosity, on virtue, on the benefits of goodness, on the dangers in the world, the benefits of renunciation, the aspects of the nature of this world, the next world. And then it wouldn't be until he really saw that somebody was open and ready and felt prepared, that he would teach the Four Noble Truths. And that would be something seeing that ripeness, readiness, then to introduce those Four Noble Truths. And it was because of these that understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and saying these stock phrases the stock introduction in the suttas, that person would when they understood these Four Noble Truths is when they would enter into the Dhamma and have that confidence and stability in the Dhamma. So that these Four Noble Truths, and we don't have the Buddha these days to give a personal direction, but we've got the teachings, we've got the structure of how the Buddha advised in the training, and for us to learn for ourselves how to seed our hearts so that we're open to these Four Noble Truths, and the implications and the benefits of understanding. And because it's when we see the the unsatisfactory elements of existence that we're able to relinquish, to let go, to put down, to not cling. And that's one of the aspects of the Buddha's teachings. That when the Buddha gave a summary of his teachings, when he was asked to give a summary of his teachings, what's the point of his teaching in a very precise and concise way, and you know, so yeah, the in the Pali, sambhe dhammanalana biniwesaya, so that. That all dhammas, all phenomena, all things are not to be clung to, not to be adhered to. Yeah, we tend to get stuck. We end up getting stuck along tracks and in ruts that keep leading us to suffering. But to be able to pick up the Dhamma in a way, and pick up experience in a way that we're not adhering to, not clinging to things, so that we're able to relinquish, to let go. So that seeing the way that the different desires, attachments are problematic, seeing how the path of sila, samadhi, panya is of real positive benefit, that it really does lead us out of suffering, and to really experience a cessation of suffering, a cessation of discontent, dissatisfaction. And of course, we get glimpses from time to time, and it's important to recognize that it's not just a one-shot deal, but that we're gaining a confidence, gaining a recognition, so that we're at least staying on the right track, so that we're learning how to put in the appropriate causes for our growth and development in the Dhamma. So that there's this contemplation of the Four Noble Truths. And don't let your practice stray very far from that. Don't let it get too complicated or too speculative or too kind of lackadaisical. That one isn't those Four Noble Truths aren't close to hand, so that's important. I remember meeting one time a Tibetan Rinpoche who was considered one of the great Dzogchen masters of the era, and he's recently passed away, I think, a year or so ago. But he's a great meditation master, teacher of most of the important meditation masters of the Tibetan lineage, meditation master to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he was an incredibly simple person and a wonderful being. And I remember him saying in teaching a group, I met him up in up near Leggett, and saying that you know, whatever teaching that you hear, whatever teaching that you're studying or following or hearing or pursuing, And if it doesn't have the Four Noble Truths apply it within it, then it's just not the Buddha's teaching. Put your effort into to where those Four Noble Truths are. And it was something that really stuck with me, because oftentimes there's, in particular, to me, I find oftentimes some of the Tibetan practices very complex, and they can be, but this particular teacher, who is respected universally amongst in the practice circles, just kept it very, very clear. And certainly saw that with Ajahn Chah, where those Four Noble Truths were never very far away from his perception and consciousness of circumstances around him. Of course, that's why he seems so unshakable. There's this clear recognition. What is it? What is it that is dukkha? And of course, once one starts to see that, and seeing it in over and over again with those Four Noble Truths, then of course cessation of dukkha is right there. It's not far away at all. So that to be exploring that with our sense experience, just sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, mental formations, mental objects. That which we experience, whether it's internal or external, sort of coarse or refined, near or far, how does that those Four Noble Truths play out? How does that experience of dukkha and the cessation of dukkha play out? Because that's what the Buddha is saying over and over again. They teach only two things: dukkha, cessation of dukkha. So that for us to, if we want to practice in the footsteps of the Buddha, just keep on track. Don't get lost. Don't let it get complicated. Don't let it get diffuse. Keep investigating at that point. And that's where we experience a real a confidence, an understanding that isn't really shaken. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.